please be seated. The court is called to order. This court calls the case of In Re RW, miscellaneous docket 2023-08, Staff Sergeant Chase N. Arnold, real party in interest. In today's oral argument, we consider whether the military judge abused his discretion in ordering an attorney from the medical law branch of the Headquarters Air Force Claims and Tort Law Litigation Division, JACC, to review petitioner's health records and identify and redact information privileged under Military Rule of Evidence 513, and release non-privileged information to government counsel to provide to defense counsel. Captain Brewington, are you prepared to proceed with oral argument?
Yes, Your Honor.
And Captain Lee, are you prepared to proceed with argument?
Yes, Your Honor.
And Captain Bruzik, are you prepared to proceed with oral argument?
Yes, Your Honor.
Petitioner's counsel, do you wish to reserve any time for rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor. May I please reserve 5 minutes?
You may, and you may proceed.
Good morning, Senior Judge Richardson, members of the court. May it please the court. I am Captain Morgan Brewington, and Ms. Devin Wells and I represent the petitioner, RW, in this proceeding. Judge Richardson, So the issues in this case paint a picture of our post-Millett world that we're operating under, and the resulting failure to follow the rules. The military judge's order regarding RW's private, confidential, and privileged patient records failed to acknowledge four different aspects of the rules that we're required to operate under. One, MRE 513 applies when mental health records are at issue without regard to the specific content that's requested. Two, where review is appropriate, the military judge's duty to personally review confidential records in camera is non-delegable. Three, military judges do not have the authority to issue extra jurisdictional orders. And then four, military judges don't have the authority to appoint a taint attorney or privileged attorney to review and redact what is unquestionably privileged material from a patient's records. In light of these errors, we're asking this court to issue a writ of mandamus, one, vacating the military judge's order, two, directing the immediate destruction of all documents which were electronically produced to trial and defense counsel, precluding the use of any of that information at trial, and then finally requiring compliance with MRE 513 before ordering any further production or discovery of this type of material.
I want to talk more about remedy. Is ordering destruction moot in this case?
No, Your Honor. Ordering the destruction is not moot, essentially because the parties having possession of these records is problematic in that RW has a privacy interest in these records. And essentially, there's no way to regulate control what happens to the document. So ordering destruction, I would say, is not moot. She still has an interest in limiting who gets to see and who gets to access and who gets to possess her confidential medical records.
Well, Captain Brewington, doesn't a military judge have authority to issue protective orders over materials such as this? So isn't there a mechanism? You said there's no mechanism for control. Isn't a protective order a mechanism of control?
Well, Your Honor, protective order is a mechanism for control within the court-martial. So as far as trial and defense counsel, the military judge does have that ability to order the protective order. However, it's not sufficient here because the rules and the procedures are very specific about who gets to have this material, the procedural requirements that have to be met before they can possess it and review it. And so the problem with that is they haven't met the requirements to access this information and to have it.
Well, and let me, building on Senior Judge Richardson's questions about remedy, let me ask you, what is the injury that you think that you've received here under MRE 513? Because any remedy has to be calibrated to address the injury. So what was the preliminary injury in this case?
Well, sir, the overarching main injury was that RW at every opportunity tried to assert her rights and was denied the ability to be heard at any point to object to the production, to the process, and to assert privilege under 513, finding that she didn't have standing to do so. So that's the harm number one. She wasn't allowed to be heard. Essentially, government initially denied the defense's request, but these records were produced to, and then that's also another part of the harm. They were produced to this third party, and I say third party, it's a person outside the court martial. And so a person who, pursuant to the rules, does not have a right to see these documents. The only person who can see them is the military judge pursuant to the rules. So
let me ask you then. If the injury is there's a procedural injury in terms of who was able to review these records to release the non-privileged material, because I presume you don't take issue with CAFS holding and Millett that treatment dates, diagnoses, prescriptions are non-privileged material. Is that correct? Do you concede Millett was correctly decided?
You at least concede that we're controlled by Millett.
That's a better question, yes, ma'am.
Yes, Your Honor. However, I would disagree with the interpretation of United States versus Millett and in the treatment that the military judge gave that.
Okay, fair enough. Let me rephrase it this way then. Presuming that we are bound by a holding in Millett that says treatment dates, diagnoses, and specific treatments, including prescriptions, are not privileged material. What is the injury in release? There's no injury in releasing that information. What is the injury in terms of this third party reviewing it if that information is not disclosed to the trial counsel or defense counsel such that it's going to be publicly displayed at the court martial?
Your Honor, the problem with that is regardless of privilege initially, there's no question these are medical records, and these are records which are related to her mental health treatment. And so the harm is just because Millett may have said these particular types of records may not be uniformly privileged under MRE 513, it didn't say that medical records in general or even other types of mental health related records were wholly unprotected.
They talked about partially privileged, commingled information, and that's a situation presumably that you're concerned about here, right? That there's, to the extent, I guess I'm not going to ask you to agree with Millett, but to the extent that Millett says that some information contained within these mental health records is non-privileged, then you have a commingled situation. And the issue is, who looks at that to, if anyone, to dissect the commingled information? My question for you is, how could we design a remedy to make the person who reviewed these records outside of the military judge unsee it? And if we can't design a remedy, then how are you entitled to a remedy insofar as if it wouldn't remediate the harm that occurred? Do you understand the question?
Yes, Your Honor. So even though, like Your Honor said, we don't have a time machine, we can't go back and make this person who reviewed it unsee it. However, we can prevent any further harm to RW and threat to her privacy interest. And so that's what we're asking.
So, Captain Brewington, if we agree that Millett is controlling and certain facts are allowed to be shared with trial counsel and defense counsel, how would you offer the new Millett framework, as you initially explained it? How would you further victims' rights under Article 6B and MRE RE 513 in light of Millett and what some judges, as this judge tried to do, move the analysis to 701 and 701G.
Well, Your Honor, I think to answer your question, there are a few pieces, but as far as moving the analysis to RCM 701, I mean, even looking to RCM 701, it's clear, it's abundantly clear who may review material that's in dispute. Unequivocally, the military judge may. Does not say anything about the ability to appoint a third party or somebody. So nowhere in the rules does it allow a military judge to divest himself of that responsibility to be kind of the gatekeeper and the person who safeguards information that may be even sensitive, not even necessarily privileged.
What about the victim's right to be heard and the right to a hearing? So even 513 states that a in-camera review may occur when certain factors are met. But what about the language about a hearing must be scheduled in order to hear the victim?
Your Honor, in this case, the military judge completely disregarded MRA 513. He said essentially because the defense purported to only seek material that was non-privileged pursuant to United States versus Millett, he said, well, if they don't want the communications, then we don't consider MRE 513 because that's all about communications. That's the only thing that's protected. And so the military judge failed to go into any analysis under MRE 513 and instead applied RCM 701. And that practice was still flawed because even looking to RCM 701, the rule does not say that anything that is considered within the possession, custody, and control of the government is automatically discoverable. There are still certain instances where the government does not provide, I mean, in cases where it's classified information, or even looking to MRE 506, excuse me, talking about information that's not classified, but it's still government information, but not subject to automatic, you know, the liberal disclosure that would apply for other types of things. So it does not mean automatic right to disclosure. However, RCM 701, in sticking to that rule, does not have a mechanism for a victim, a procedural mechanism, that is, to move for relief from obtaining these records, to object, to, you know, assert their rights. It doesn't provide that mechanism specifically within that rule. So by saying we're not moving to 703, essentially we're depriving a victim of any process at all, any say.
So you would adopt a process that looks akin to 703, vice going right back to the 513 framework for victims?
No, Your Honor. It is our position that MRE 513 absolutely applies
to non-privileged information.
Well, Your Honor, it's impossible to know. You know, when the request is being made for material which is likely to contain privileged material under the rule, it's commingled, and it's impossible to know what is. It doesn't matter how specific the order is. We can't guarantee that they're going to be properly redacted at the outset.
Captain Burrington, I want to switch gears, and I know because your time's running low. Do you think the military judge has the authority to appoint, maybe allow, the victim and victim's counsel to do this review and redaction?
Allow? I mean, of course, that's always an option. However, I think that that's problematic because victims' counsel are in a position where we represent the interest of the named victim. And so in order for us to, you know, put ourselves in a position where we're then, like, you know, an appointed agent of the court, prosecution, I'm not really sure which side it would be, would be improper, and it would impede our ability to represent our client.
Well, so typically, counsel, when someone's asserting a privilege over a system of records where there are some matters that are privileged but others that are not, a privilege log is completed. Was there a privilege log that you submitted with your motion here to guide and direct the discretion of whoever was reviewing the information?
A privilege log?
A privilege log. That is, you go through system of records is 360 pages that was forwarded, right? And you go through and you make a log of page 3, privileged, you know, lines, whatever, what through whatever? Did you create a privilege log in this case?
I personally did not create a privilege.
And I think what we're getting at is, yes, victim's counsel has a duty to represent the victim, but can that person play a more active role? Could the victim's counsel, get the records, review the records, decide or determine or suggest, recommend what should be redacted and what could be released, and then go from there? Or should that play no part in the process?
Your Honor, it should play absolutely no part in the process. So just me equally to anybody else, I have no right to be violating my client's privacy interest in reviewing her records. RW is a female. So, putting myself in that position and requiring a client to produce records to me, even understanding that I represent their interest and that's my sole function, it's still improper. If they want to assert their rights to privacy and to avoid production and disclosure of their confidential and potentially privileged material, they should be able to do that.
Did you have a follow-up question to that? Or did I get to what you were getting at?
You did, ma'am. One other iteration on that, and with the senior judges, ma'am, with the time running down, you want me to hold this off for rebuttal?
Yeah.
I'll hold off. Thank you, ma'am.
All right, we're going to hear from you at the end with your 5 minutes, and as well as any additional questions we have for you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
All right, Government Counsel, you may proceed.
Senior Judge Richardson, members of the court, may it please the court. I am Captain Kate Lee, and along with Lieutenant Colonel James Farrell, we represent the United States. A military judge's authority to regulate discovery is a fundamental tenet of what makes trial practice fair, not only for the accused and the prosecution, but for the victim as well. And that fairness is key not only to a just result, but to a defensible one. So with that in mind, this court should not issue a writ for 3 reasons. First, because a military judge's use of the medical law attorney as a filter attorney was a lawful exercise of his authority under RCM 701, not a judicial usurpation of power. Second,
can you be more specific when you say 701?
701 G1, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Second, using filter attorneys is not an erroneous practice, given that courts in every other federal jurisdiction do the same. And finally, because the judge was trying to protect petitioner's privacy in a situation where protections from other rules did not apply, there is no clear and indisputable right to mandamus relief.
So, Captain Lee, you said judges in every other federal jurisdiction do the same. The cases that you cited in your supplemental citation of authority, which we're taking under advisement here, only reference attorney-client privilege cases. So what authority do you have for the proposition that judges in every other jurisdiction employ taint team type attorneys to review mental health records?
Your Honor, as you noted, the cases that I cited were relating to the attorney-client privilege, but I think they are still persuasive precisely because they deal with attorney-client privilege, and oftentimes they deal with attorney-client privilege communications involving the subject of the actual investigation or prosecution. And in those cases, the courts have noted that when such records are already in the possession, by the time they've been seized pursuant to a lawful search warrant, et cetera, if they're in the possession of the government, using filter attorneys or taint teams is, as the courts have noted, respectful of, rather than injurious to, the privilege holder's rights.
Now, in those examples, in the possession of the government, do you mean the prosecutors and investigators? Or just do you mean the government writ large, like a military treatment facility?
So, Your Honor, it's a little bit of both. When records are already in the possession of, for example, an agency, where
I'm talking about the cases that you are relying on having to do with taint teams, filter teams, and the attorney-client privilege. You said records already in the possession of the government. What do you mean by government when you're talking about those cases?
Yes, Your Honor. Those cases deal primarily with records that at that point have been seized by either investigators or prosecutors.
And does that distinction matter? Because in this case, I think we can, correct me if I'm wrong, in this case, the prosecutors and investigators did not have the records at issue. They were not provided until the judge ordered them.
Correct, Your Honor.
So does that distinction matter?
So, of course, the distinction is there, but it's not, it doesn't make such a difference that the cases are no longer persuasive. At the point, for example, in the federal cases, at the point that prosecutors and investigators have seized information, that is in the possession of the government, presumably because they're seizing information from outside agencies. For example, in these cases, they're seizing information from law firms. So that information was not in the possession of the government. Here, the medical records belonging to petitioner, who was treated at a military treatment facility, those are in the possession of military authorities, and therefore producible under RCM 701.
Counsel, in terms of the military judge's discretion to appoint a taint team, for lack of a better word, to review this, what's the limiting principle, if any, on who can be appointed?
So, Your Honor, RCM 701 does not contain, of course, does not contain explicit reference to filter attorneys or taint teams, and therefore doesn't contain a limiting principle.
So is it your position that there is no limiting principle?
I think, Your Honor, judges are accorded a great deal of deference when it comes to regulating discovery, and so in terms of a limiting principle, really, to the extent that we trust judges to regulate discovery, their discretion is sort of that limit.
So the discretion is their only guide. Does the person need to be an attorney? Do they need to be in good standing with a bar? Do they need to be qualified and certified? To whom are they accountable? Could it be you? Could it be me? I mean, does the judge really have no limits on his discretion? It's just, his best, whatever he deems appropriate, or she?
So, Your Honor, I think those are all, those would be all great limiting principles. The fact that they're an attorney, that they are in good standing, and that was obviously the case here because the judge picked a medical law attorney who regularly is from the medical law branch, which regularly advises these military treatment facilities.
But, Captain Lee, doesn't that violate the victim's privacy? Sharing these records with an attorney in JACC, is that not per se violative of her right to privacy?
So, Your Honor, no, because ultimately, what petitioner wants is for somebody. In this case, petitioner wanted the judge to look at the records. So somebody would have to look at those records.
Right, but the rules allow for an in-camera review. So I don't think that the victim was advocating for a third-party reviewer in order to protect her rights and her records, the confidential, privileged, potentially information that's in her medical and mental health records.
Yes, Your
JACC.
Yes, Your Honor. So, would you mind repeating the question?
So, isn't it a per se violation to share her privileged information with JACC under the guise of a military judge's order?
Your Honor, it is. It is not because The reason for the review was to filter out that privileged information. And yes, the rules, RCM 701 does allow for an in-camera review if another rule requires it or by motion from a party. And neither of those happened in this case.
Right, but how is a victim going to be heard on who her records are being shared with if a military judge has no boundary to 701 G1, as you articulate? How is a victim going to be heard at all? How are her rights to privacy protected at all? Under what regulation or scheme do we have any ability to enforce JACC keeping her records private?
Your Honor, first, to address under what regulation or scheme we would enforce JACC, the JACC attorney obviously has their own professional obligations and would have received the same order from the court to review, which
Counsel, let me ask you this. Assuming arguendo that the JACC attorney that ultimately reviewed this is primarily responsible for litigating medical malpractice claims and not claims of medical privilege, what bearing should that have on our decision of whether this is a reasonable exercise of discretion by the military judge in designating this person to review the records? What sort of relationship should this reviewing attorney have to have with the records agency in this? None? Some? Where should we look to? Is there anything, and then let me ask you this, is there anything in the record to indicate your assertion that you just said the JACC regularly advises on these matters, not regularly litigates medical malpractice claims on behalf of the United States Air Force, regularly advises on the scope of mental health privilege to base hospitals? Where is that in the record?
Your Honor, that is not in the, of course, very limited record before this court. That is based on, you know, being in the JAC Corps and speaking with someone from JACC about the scope of their duties and how much they advise.
How does the judge have the authority to order someone from JACC to do anything?
Your Honor, the judge, if you look at Articles 46 and 48, the judge has authority to compel the production of evidence from whoever that may be and to punish anyone who doesn't obey an
JACC's
order from the court.
JACC is not an evidence custodian. They're a custodian of the records. They don't have the records.
The convening authority appoints experts, not military judges, right?
Well, let's continue on my question. So, so you say 701 allows the judge to order a non-party who does not have records to receive them, look at them on the clock, presumably, do something with them, and then send them back, right? So you're saying that the judge has inherent authority to do that.
Yes, Your Honor.
Or not inherent, but based on 701.
Yes, Your Honor,
okay.
To regulate the time, place, and manner of discovery.
Do you have any other authority besides 701, is it G, regulating discovery?
Yes, Your Honor.
Any other authority for him to be able to reach out to somebody and tell them what to do like that?
So, Your Honor, our authority is primarily RCM 701G1, and of course, looking at the other federal circuits, the use of such filter attorneys should be, in every other federal circuit, should be indicated.
Right, but in those scenarios, at least the cases I can think of right now, the government went to the judge with a plan. We have a taint team. This is what we want you to do. Did that happen here?
In this case, Your Honor, there was in terms of who was being appointed, I believe there was some discussion about who in fact should be appointed. And the order that the judge issued names first a civilian attorney, but then later they switched it out for a Major Victoria Wright because she was familiar with military justice.
That's my next question, is I see an order dated 27 September. I also see it was 26 September, but it's 27 September. It orders I won't use her name, a civilian.
Yes, Your Honor.
I don't see a major's name on here. What authority did that major have to review those records?
Yes, Your Honor. The name, the civilian attorney from JACC was ultimately switched out with military medical law attorney.
The military judge switched them
yes,
out?
Yes, Your Honor. Yes.
And that in an order?
Not in he did not reissue the order, but they did it in an 802 with discussion with both
orders
the parties.
Typically can't be issued in an 802, isn't that right, counsel?
That's correct,
the
Your
rule
Honor.
Specifically forbids it. So what authority should we give a directive in an 802 that modifies an actual written order?
Your Honor, understanding that, of course, a judge doesn't rule on anything in an 802, by the point that they switched out the active duty or the reservist for the civilian, the order itself, the protocol itself was already in place. The switching of the names didn't change anything about what he wanted that reviewing attorney to do.
Is that fact about the judge actually switching out the reviewer, is that before us somewhere?
That is not, there's of course no order, it's not documented, but Your Honor, I can submit a supplemental brief documenting that to that effect. Your Honor, the judge in this case went the extra mile to provide petitioner with protection in situations where the MRA 513, the protections of that rule did not apply. He lawfully exercised his authority to do that, and that's not a judicial usurpation of power. That is exactly how we want military judges to use their power and authority in service of a victim's right to be treated with dignity and fairness.
Counsel, let me ask you this. So what was it that the military judge was ordering here? Was it an in-camera review by this third-party person? Was it some other screening that's not specifically referenced in a rule? What was the intended process the military judge was trying to effectuate with the order?
Your Honor, it was the additional screening because MRE 513 did not apply. The judge implemented an additional screening mechanism to protect against the possible disclosure of privileged information because he's just being extra careful. He wanted the military treatment facility to produce only diagnoses and treatment information.
So why didn't the judge just do the review himself? Like, wouldn't that be extra careful? Well, why does he have to find a third person not embedded with the military treatment facility, although maybe they are, and maybe you can speak to that point, but wouldn't that be the most careful way for the judge to protect petitioner's privacy?
Your Honor, I guess the short answer to why he didn't do it himself is because he didn't have to. Because this discovery was regulated under RCM 701, it's not unreasonable, nor is it clearly and indisputably erroneous for him to decide that having someone who's completely unaffiliated with either the prosecution or even the trial do the review, because they are screening to make sure no privilege gets out, full stop. Whereas if the judge, if the judge is the one who's screening it, and let's say that there was the military treatment facility forgot to redact some bit of privilege, at that point, he's going to have to notify the parties and they're going to have to litigate it. But the whole point is that the defense was only asking for non-privileged records, and the judge only ordered the production of non-privileged records, and he took this extra step to protect petitioner's privacy precisely because the other procedural requirements in other rules did not apply.
Well, counsel, I'm sorry, go ahead.
So because MRE 513 doesn't apply, and it's, if I understand your argument, and it's procedure for the judge to do an in-camera review, that you're arguing that the judge shouldn't do an in-camera review anyway. He should instead, even if he's not applying 513 and could do an in-camera review, he should have somebody else do the equivalent of an in-camera review.
That's not necessarily our position, Your Honor. Our position is that the judge's decision in this case, that was a lawful exercise of his prescribed jurisdiction. If a party had made a motion under RCM 701 to have him do in-camera review anyway, he could have. And RCM 513, of course, did not apply in this case, so he's not subject to those requirements to conduct an in-camera review.
Counsel, what role should DOD regulations circumscribing the release of medical and mental health information play and our evaluation of whether the military judge abused his discretion in directing this attorney, otherwise unaffiliated with the case, to conduct a review here? I'm thinking of DOD manual, I believe it's 6205.18, which this court recently described in our opinions that came out in NRA SC and NRA SB just earlier this week. Does that have a role to play here? And if not, why not?
Your Honor, I think it does have a role to play, and this court should consider that manual says that when protected health information is requested pursuant to a court order, the subject of those records is not entitled to either notice or even an opportunity to object. So if this was any other witness, they would not know that their diagnoses and treatment information was being released because they are not represented. The victim is a limited participant and has the benefit of being represented by counsel who happens to know discovery is occurring. But that doesn't mean she acquires additional rights that other people would not have under HIPAA.
So under 703, for issuance of subpoenas post-referral of confidential and private information for victims, victims entitled to notice an opportunity to be heard, right? And presumably to bring a motion to quash because it's unreasonable and oppressive. right?
Correct, Your Honor.
So your position is that this is an order that's lawful, but it's not a 703 order, so she gets no opportunity to be heard about whether this is a reasonable exercise.
Correct, Your Honor. The records in
question. So she would have more privacy interests over her cell phone records than her mental health records in the government's understanding of this issue.
Well, Your Honor, a victim's right to privacy, of course, is very important, but it's not absolute. And as the Court of Appeals for the Armed Forces noted in Millett, the president has the authority and responsibility to balance an accused's right to access relevant information with a victim's right to privacy. And by limiting MRA 513 to only communications or records pertaining to communications, that is, records having reference to communications, he's decided where that balance lies.
Well, I understand, counsel. It's just that I'm talking about now the exercise of reasonable discretion, which you said previously the military judge has discretion under 701G, that discretion is not specifically bounded by the rule, that it's just a general reasonableness standard. The government to this point has not articulated any guiding principle for what that standard would be. I'm looking elsewhere in the rules in a circumstance where a victim has what might be viewed as a lesser privacy interest in things which are not as inherently soul-searching as would be communications to a mental health provider. And if I hear the government speaking correctly, you're saying that notwithstanding the fact that a victim who had a release of confidential information, personal confidential information, which might be like, say, explicit pictures shared in phone and text messages, right? Subject to a court order afterwards?
I will let Judge Warren continue his question. I'll let you answer, and then I have another question.
Yes, ma'am.
So I just want to know why it's not an abuse of discretion for the military judge to outsource the review of this information to a third-party attorney outside of the facility that holds the records in light of the fact that the rules permit notice and opportunity to be heard on lesser privacy interests in the rules. How do those things align? How do you reconcile that?
Yes, Your Honor. So first, if I may address, so you're saying that you're asking me how it's not an abuse of discretion, but that is not the standard in this case because we're here on an extraordinary writ. So the judge's decision had to be a judicial usurpation of power or clearly erroneous of a practice that's likely to occur. And that's neither of those because even though RCM 703 provides, of course, a notice to be, to be heard, and the way we can reconcile those is, Your Honor, we operate in the framework which we are given. And under the rules that we have, when the judge is producing or ordering the production of evidence under RCM 701, because evidence is in the possession of a military authority, when he had it sent to the medical law attorney, who is still a part of the military, for review, it was like effectuating an in-house counsel review. And so he was doing that to take an extra step. If the medical law treatment or if the military treatment facility had gone to the medical law branch of their own accord and said, can you double check our work, we wouldn't be none the wiser and this issue would not be before the court. The military judge went the extra mile of ensuring that such a review would occur in order to protect petitioner's privacy interests. And as your judge asked earlier, there is no actual injury here. Petitioner has not identified anything that was improperly released that should not have been. And when there is no actual injury, there cannot be a clear and indisputable right to relief.
So I think you answered my first question, which is, it's your position that the military judge did not err, much less I didn't phrase that right. It's not just that the high bar for writ of mandamus hasn't been met. You said your position is the judge didn't err at all.
Correct, Your Honor. Okay.
If we rule in petitioner's favor, what remedy should we order? What should that look like? Petitioner's asking for destruction of records.
Your Honor, given that petitioner has not identified anything that was improperly released, I think destruction of records would be moot.
So whatever it looks like, it's not destruction of records?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. All right. Any other questions? All right. Thank you. 20 minutes goes very fast. All right, counsel for the real party in interest, you may proceed.
Yes, Your Honor, thank you. Good morning, Senior Judge Richardson, members of the panel, and may it please the court. My name is Captain Michael James Brusick. I'm joined today by my co-counsel, Ms. Megan Morenos. And together we represent Staff Sergeant Chase Arnold, the real party of interest in this case. Members of the panel, the matter before the military judge was one in which Staff Sergeant Arnold Chase's rights to discovery, and indeed his right to defend himself, was squarely at issue. And to that end, the order that the military judge fashioned was a reasonable expression of the judge's authority over the discovery process and to regulate that discovery process in a way that both honored those due process rights of Staff Sergeant Arnold, as well as the privacy interests of RW. And for that reason, the actions of the military judge did not rise to a clear and indisputable error, nor did it rise to an abuse of discretion, and that being the case, we respectfully ask that the petitioner's writ for extraordinary relief be denied. And there are two points of discussion that guide us towards this conclusion. The first is that the military judge was empowered to implement the order that they did per Article 46 of the Uniform Code of Military Justice, as well as rules for court-martial 701 and 703. And second, that in-camera review under Military Rule of Evidence 513 procedurally was not available in this case. That being said, the action that the military judge took was striking a balance between the privacy interests of RW, as well as the due process interests of Staff Sergeant Arnold, while at the same time creating a path for the discovery process to continue in light of the concerns that were expressed by the medical treatment facility. So I want to begin first by discussing a little more about Rule for Court Martial 701, which
actually,
is... Yes, Your Honor.
We're going to move to your second point.
Absolutely.
I think this is your second point, or part of it. This is from your brief. Finally, the circumstances before the trial court did not call for the military judge to grant discretionary in-camera review under Military Rule of Evidence 513E. Because none of the materials at issue are privileged, and the defense specifically tailored the request to include only evidence discoverable under Millett, and no privileged materials were requested. So that's the kind of the area I want to explore. And so the question is, if none of the materials at issue were privileged, then why did an attorney need to be named to review to ensure that only treatment and diagnosis records are released and that any and all matters subject to privilege under Military Rule of Evidence 513 are fully redacted prior to providing the information? So if none of the materials at issue were privileged, then why did the judge have to designate somebody to review them and make sure, or redact, not just make sure, redact any privileged records?
Senior Judge Richardson, within the framework of Military Rule of Evidence 513E2, the question with regard to production or admission is whether or not you're dealing with bona fide privileged materials. That's what triggers the procedural guidance within MRE 513, and that's not what was at issue here. Because what the military judge had ordered to be compelled was non-privileged matters. They, in fact, went a step further to explain that the only matters that were going to be disclosed were records pertaining to diagnosis and records pertaining to treatment.
Then why would anybody need to review those? Why not just order the MTF, and I'm calling them MTF, Military Treatment Facility. It's actually not. It's the Operational Medical Readiness Squadron Mental Health Flight Commander. Why not just order that person to turn over responsive records? Why did this third person need to be in the role of identifying privileged information?
Yes, Your Honor. And this is the post-Millett world we live in, when there's a possibility of having a commingling of privileged and non-privileged materials. Understanding that is the issue, understanding that's what the military judge was facing. That being said, what the military judge could have done is simply say under Rule for Court Martial 703 G2, that because this is evidence in possession of the government, the evidence custodian is required to provide said evidence over to the parties. He could have done that.
I'm sorry, 703?
Yes, Your Honor, 703.
Well, I think you meant 701 G2.
No, to clarify,
So 703 G2 is talking about possession information that's not in possession of the government and compelling production of that. 701 G is a military judge's ability to regulate discovery for things that are within the government's control. So I just want to make sure that we're in the box that you intend to be. So which box do you think we're in?
Yes, Judge Warren. And as a framework, it's our position that rule for court-martial 701 is what controls here, because the evidence at issue was in possession of a military authority. And understand, when we talk about this topic, typically we have a distinction between rule for court-martial 701 guiding discovery in the context of evidence in possession of the government and RCM 703 guiding evidence in possession of non-government entities. That being said, RCM 703 G2 does refer to the process for acquiring evidence that is in possession of the government. And specifically what it speaks to is that the evidence custodian is the party responsible for providing that evidence, and that evidence can be produced simply by requesting it from the custodian. So that being said, the military judge simply could have done just that, ordered that the custodian was to acquire these records, do whatever was necessary to filter out privileged versus non-privileged materials, and then provide it to the parties.
So, Captain Brusick, is it your position that then 513 has no role to play, despite the fact that we're talking about a victim of sexual assault and we're talking about her records?
Judge Douglas, it's not to say that Military Rule of Evidence 513 has no guidance. And in fact, if we look at the military judge's ruling on the motion to compel, the military judge did delineate between privileged versus non-privileged materials, specifically explaining that if privileged materials were identified, that was to be flagged and provided to the court. Presumably at that point, we may be looking at a situation where defense could have moved to see if an exception applied to that privilege, whereby it should be disclosed. If we get into that territory, now we're squarely within in-camera review as contemplated under Military Rule of Evidence 513.
So your position is that although in Artful, the military judge was distinguishing between the various paradigms?
Yes, Your Honor, I think that's perhaps a fair characterization. But bringing back to the issue, the military judge ultimately was trying to strike this balance between Staff Sergeant Arnold's right to receive non-privileged materials through discovery while acknowledging RW's right to privacy.
So, and do you agree here, counsel, that the call of the defense's motion to compel and the military judge, as it married up with the military judge's order, is that ultimately the military judge ended up sending 360 pages of information to be reviewed by the JACC attorney, right?
Your Honor, if I'm understanding, perhaps I misheard, the military judge receiving those materials or the...
So as a result of you filed a motion to compel saying we want treatment dates, diagnoses, and treatments of the victim, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
And you're saying that those are subject to release under Millett because they don't qualify as confidential communications under 513, right?
Correct, Your Honor.
And then as a result of that, that information apparently was contained within 360 pages of mental health records that were within the possession of this 31st mental health flight, right?
Correct, Your Honor.
Okay. So, Millett talks about potential commingling of non-privileged information within a set of otherwise privileged records, and that could make those records partially privileged. Do you recall that passage of Millett?
Yes, Your Honor.
Do you agree that that's the paradigm that we were dealing with here, that in ordering production of 360 pages to look for Millett information, we were in a commingled record situation?
Your Honor, it's our position this was a commingled record situation.
Okay, so if it's a commingled record situation, in terms of the processes available for the military judge to secure the information that the defense might be entitled to under Millett and 701. Judge Hardy recently, in oral argument for NRA HVZ, remarked during it, in my view, 513E1 and E2 apply to all medical records that are requested under MRE 513, and E3 is very specific to the privilege records. So that is to say that he's saying, if you're not asking for privilege material, then an in-camera review wouldn't be required under E3. But if you're asking for information that's involved, that contained in mental health medical records, a hearing is still required under MRE 513 E1 and E2. Do you agree with that representation?
Your Honor, if that is the position or the question that was poised during the oral arguments in HVZ, yes, we agree that that question was poised.
Okay. So presuming that, and there's been no decision on that yet, so we're still just operating in this world, but in order to get us in the paradigm that you think we're in, if a hearing was required under E2 for the military judge to at least hear about how these might be commingled and steps necessary to prevent that, and the military judge denied victims' right to be, victims' petition on that, said, you have no standing, denied, right? How is any order issued after that? Not clearly and indisputably beyond his authority.
So, Your Honor, I believe the question hinges on whether there was a bona fide order for the production or admission of privileged materials. That's the plain language.
Wait, because that's what Judge Hardy's trying to do the distinction on. Judge Hardy says a victim would not be entitled to MRE 513 E3 material. E3 only applies to when a party is seeking privileged materials, right?
Correct.
E1 and E2 hearing, according to Judge Hardy, in my view, 513 E1 and E2 apply to all medical records that are requested under MRE 513. And E1 and E2 says there shall be a hearing, victim, the patient shall have a right to be heard, et cetera, et cetera. So if a hearing was required under MRE 513 E1 and E2, and if no hearing occurred, and if an order was still issued, how's that order lawful?
Your Honor, if a hearing was in fact required, that may get us into that territory, but it's our position that a hearing was not required.
Okay.
And we disagree with the thrust of the question, perhaps, that was poised by the Court of Appeals for the Armed Forces. Reason being, MRE 513 E2, it speaks to production and admission of evidence covered by this privilege. And understanding through Millett, that privilege now only applies to the communications between the psychotherapist and the patient. So if what is being ordered for production doesn't fall within that framework of communication, then it wouldn't fall within the language and the procedures.
Well, let me ask you this. Here, the records were not with JACC at the outset, right?
Correct, Your Honor.
The order for the motion to compel was directed at the holder of the records, which was the 31st squadron mental health flight, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
And then those records were transmitted via DOD safe to JACC, right?
Correct.
MRE 513 E2 says before ordering the production or admission of evidence of a patient's records or communications, records being broader than the communications piece, military judge must conduct a hearing, et cetera, et cetera. So it's your position that transmitting the records from one place to another was not a production within the meaning of that term?
Correct, Your Honor.
Why?
Your Honor, the reason being is because in the regular course of business, one would expect that if a custodian is charged with the task of looking at these records and ensuring that nothing privileged is released, it would stand to reason that they would work with a legal advisor in order to carry that task out correctly. And as was referenced earlier,
if they work with someone that's not their legal advisor, why is that authorized?
And Your Honor, this brings us back to Rule for Court-Martial 701G1. And the limiting principle is written into the rule itself at the end where it says that the conditions imposed by the judge must be fair and just. Now, when we look at the...
That's helpful. So let me frame it this way. How is it fair and just for a military judge to direct an attorney who is not the advising counsel, the records custodian, to review these records, which otherwise are not authorized to be released for anyone?
Your Honor, it's fair and just because this was the third or fourth step in the process by which the military judge was trying to see this discovery process through. Initially, it was simply a matter of trial counsel going to the evidence custodian and getting the records that were requested. After there was some pushback from that, now we started to go through a series of different people that were charged with reviewing the records. It's not until there was resistance from those initial individuals that perhaps even had a closer proximity to the MTF, that finally we find ourselves with an attorney from JACC.
Why did anyone have to be charged with reviewing those records?
Well, Your Honor, it's certainly important and understandable that the MTF would want to make sure that they're abiding by all the regulations, the Privacy Act, HIPAA, as well as the privilege concern, to have a legal advisor play a role in this process.
And don't they internally have the resources to do that? Why does the judge have to order somebody by name?
Your Honor, it is our position that the MTF did internally have the capability of doing that, but the MTF refused to do that. They asked for somebody else to take a look at it. And so if the military judge now has a conundrum, he could throw his hands in the air and say, all right, it's privileged, I guess we're going to move on. It's not going to happen. But that's not what the military judge did. And that's not in the interest of fairness within the discovery process. Once we get to that point, the military judge is doing everything he can to see this process through.
Well, let me ask you this way. So the military judge, in that circumstance, if someone is defying an order, could hold someone in contempt, right?
That is correct, Your Honor.
Could abate the proceedings, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Didn't have to order someone who is not an attorney to the records custodian to review the records, right? So what role should the availability of these other remedies play in our determination of whether the military judge selected something that was fair and just under these circumstances in ordering someone else to review these records?
Yes, Your Honor, and had we gone back to that first step where the military judge just instructed for the evidence custodian to review the records, if they didn't hand it over, maybe that gets us into 701G3 territory, rule for court-martial 703G3, where we are dealing with different remedies to include abatement, preventing witness testimony, things of that nature. It certainly speaks to something that the judge went above and beyond to try and avoid that from being the outcome here. And understand, with regard to my client, he wanted this evidence, and if the process isn't carried out the way it's supposed to, there is some benefit to him in that regard.
Captain Brusick,
yes, Your Honor.
Did your client have access to this evidence already because she had consented and signed it over in 2021?
And Your Honor, that raises an interesting question because there was a consent form with the Office of Special Investigations. There was a volume of medical records handed over. Because that wasn't a part of the discovery process, it was part of the investigative process, it's incumbent upon defense counsel to do the discovery request, to do the motion to compel, to see what else may be out there.
What does that mean that it wasn't part of the discovery process? So does that mean that defense counsel did not go to OSI and inspect the records that were already filed away and available?
Judge Douglas, to sharpen what I'm speaking to here, is that the acquisition of those records came up during the OSI investigation. And then those records were provided to defense counsel as part of the discovery of OSI's records and OSI's investigation.
And when we say those records, so the records that were procured by OSI by virtue of this consent release form that was signed that said medical records, sent mental health records, just said medical records, that did not contain the information that you were seeking to compel, that is mental health diagnoses, treatment, mental health treatment dates, et cetera, et cetera?
Well, Your Honor, it certainly is the case that it must have contained something, but defense is always in a position where they can't know what they don't know. There may be something else out there, and that's part of the purpose of the discovery process. If there were records above and beyond what OSI had already received, that would have to be carried out through the discovery process, going straight to the MTF.
I guess one other thing, from the record to your knowledge, is there anything to tell us whether the 360 pages that were ultimately sent up for JACC review were subsumed within the 500 pages that were initially obtained by OSI as a result of the victim's signing that records release consent?
It doesn't appear on the record, Your Honor. However, it stands to reason that if RW is raising the issue now, and there were materials already provided to the parties, that there must be something above and beyond that.
Could it be that she acquired victim's counsel and then asserted her right to privilege after she gave consent to release of her records?
That could be the case as well, Your Honor.
So we don't know for sure.
We do not know for sure.
Thank you.
Captain Brusick, I want to circle back to something that you touched upon with Judge Warren. So I'm looking at, and I have the benefit of having it right in front of me, Military Rule of Evidence 513E, E1, it talks about production or admission of records or communications of a patient. Sub 2 says production or admission of evidence of a patient's records or communications, right? So the key language there, a patient's records or communications, which is also defined earlier. Sub 3, E3, talks about production or admissibility of protected records or communications. Is there a significance to the distinction of the different words used in 1 and 2 versus 3?
Yes, Your Honor. And if I'm understanding your question, it's whether it is, if something is designated as a protected communication within the rule versus just a record.
Right.
It's our position that in the post-Millett world that we're working in, That distinction doesn't have necessarily a high bearing on this issue, except to say once we are into MRE 513 E3 territory, that in-camera review, that only applies in the context of materials which are explicitly found to be privileged, because the purpose of the in-camera review is not to filter between privileged and non-privileged materials. It exists in order to determine whether an exception to that privilege can be applied.
So wouldn't the language about production or admission of records or communications of a patient, wouldn't that apply to commingled records? So we don't know whether there's a protected communication in there or not.
And Senior Judge Richardson, I can see my time is just about up, if I may answer the question. Your Honor, I apologize if I could hear the question again.
It's commingled.
Yes, Your Honor.
Are commingled records covered under sub 1 and 2? In order to find out if there is anything, I mean, we don't know if they're protected. Rather, the commingling means there's protected and non-protected, right? Is that what kind of we mean by commingled?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, so we know sub 3 talks about protected, but why do sub 1 and sub 2 not, I mean, do they apply when we're talking about commingled records?
Your Honor, it's a question of what is being ordered for production. So if we have these commingled records, and the production order is for both the privileged and the non-privileged information, that's what gets us into MRE 513E2. That's the point of distinction. If we're dealing with non-privileged materials exclusively, materials where anything that is privileged is redacted, then we don't get into that territory because there's no order for production. Okay. And, Your Honor, I can see that my time is up, if I may conclude.
Let me first ask any additional questions. You may.
Thank you, Your Honor. To conclude, as we stand here today with regard to a writ for extraordinary relief, and in light of the standard that the petitioner must show a clear and indisputable error on the part of the military judge, this case does not feature that. Rather, the military judge taking reasonable steps in light of a continued back and forth with the MTF to ensure that any privileged materials were not included in the release of the records. That being the case, we respectfully ask that the writ for extraordinary relief be denied.
Thank you. Thank you. Captain Brewington, you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. So I'd like to talk a little bit more about United States versus Millett. But first, I want to discuss Jaffe versus Redman. And so this is kind of a seminal case on the concerns, and it finally led to the codification of a federal rule that protects a psychotherapist privilege. And so in that case,
I've been around long enough, I remember that. Keep going.
In that case, the court emphasize the strong interest in facilitating appropriate treatment for individuals needing mental health care and applying reason and experience. That was what the court really relied on in making this determination. The court found that interest was sufficient to outweigh the need for probative evidence, even in criminal cases. And then the court also recognized the chilling effect in failing to adequately protect the psychotherapist privilege. Quote, particularly when it's obvious that the circumstances that give rise to the need for treatment will probably result in litigation. So the question here that I would pose is wouldn't it have the same chilling effect in a victim's decision, a victim who had received mental health treatment, and their decision on whether they're willing to participate in the court-martial process and to seek justice. And so understanding that that's kind of a policy argument, I do think it's important before we're going back into Millett and trying to really understand what CAF was trying to do there. And so the position is United States versus Millett simply analyzed whether any and all mental health related information should automatically be considered privileged under 513 alpha specifically. The court still recognized that the context and the content of a particular record was important in making that determination and sifting through what's privileged and what is not. In the Millett court.
Right, and the question in this case is who's supposed to do the sifting? Right, that's our specified issue. Other cases, it was done in-house. Nobody asked the question. The judge just said, make it so, okay? We only want things that are non-protected. Turn over what's non-protected, and I'm not really paying, not ordering how that should happen. This is why this case is different. It's because the military judge actually ordered an attorney to go through. And so, can you speak to that?
So, basically, Your Honor, the point I was trying to get to is the court's interpretation of the trial court's interpretation of U.S. versus Millett. Basically, in the judge's position, empowered him to avoid the requirement set forth under MRE 513E, and then also avoid the specific process that's required for the review. And that's just simply not what United States versus Millett says. It even addressed 513E specifically, and it was only for the purpose of addressing whether that provision guarantees privilege and information other than communications, and said to the extent that those provisions reveal what MRE 513 alpha expressly protects, they are also partially protected, and that's a direct quote from the opinion. Just not as the government argues that the entirety of every patient record is necessarily included within that privilege. So the argument here is MRE 513 absolutely applied. And so it's important to answering this question that's before the court is because we have clear guidance on who can conduct this review and the procedures that should be followed. And that guidance says that the military judge should be reviewing these in camera after a hearing is held and after the conditions are met.
And so that would be what you would have us order. So I heard your opening at the beginning of your first presentation. Part of what you asked us to do is, in giving an order to destroy the records that have already been redacted and released, you want us to offer that the remedy is that those records can no longer be used at trial. I don't know that this court has the authority to do that. So what would you have us issue as an order that is within our authority to prescribe at this stage, pre-trial?
Your Honor, the request would be that MRA 513 applies, should have been applied, and so standing by destruction of the records is appropriate, the records that have already been produced. But because MRE 513 echo applies, this order was not lawful, the process was not lawful, and so any further efforts to obtain after the records have been destroyed, any further efforts to obtain that should follow the procedures that are prescribed under the rules.
Any other questions?
No, ma'am.
And if I may, before I finish up, I see I have about 30 seconds.
You're 30 seconds over, but you may conclude.
Oh, thank you, Your Honor, for clarifying that. I apologize. So just kind of speaking to the standard of review, because it was discussed with other counsel. And so Article 6 is completely silent on what the standard of review should be and seeking relief. And I know this was also discussed in HBZ, so hopefully we'll have some insight on that. But the Crime Victims Rights Act says that it's abuse of discretion. I know that this court has framed this issue under an abuse of discretion standard. But then there's the All Rights Act, which government and defense seem to take the position that the burden is, or the standard of review is clear and indisputable error. However, on this particular issue, this is a jurisdictional issue, and courts, military judges, have the duty to satisfy themselves of their own jurisdiction before taking any action. And so because this order that's at issue specifically was outside of the jurisdiction that the military court had as an Article I tribunal, This is a jurisdictional issue, and it should be reviewed de novo.
By jurisdiction, you mean that currently under RCM 703G, the trial counsel has authority to issue subpoenas to non-government entities, but the military judge doesn't acquire that authority until 27 December 2023 under the new rule?
Correct, Your Honor.
Okay.
Article 46, it talks about the mechanisms that can be employed in obtaining discovery and regulating it, and limited, subject to the limitations of what the rules allow for and what precedent prescribes. And so we're limited to 701 and 703.
Thank you, Captain Brewing.
Thank you, Your Honors.
All right, and I want to thank all counsel for your arguments today. This court will render a decision in due course. The court is now closed.
All right.